Hey everybody, this is Brett. Today is June 27th, and I have just returned, actually late last night, from the 2011 Porcupine Freedom Festival up in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And oh, what a time. What a week. It's like the best week of the year. I just can't wait to be back there in like 358 days. You know, I got to make quite a few new friends. I got to reunite with friends made at the last Pork Fest in 2010. And most importantly, I got to have some really wonderful face-to-face interactions with people who, listeners to the show and such, that I had only previously talked to on Facebook or on the School Sucks forums. So it was just a huge success. It was an awesome, awesome time. And maybe we'll do more Pork Fest talk in the near future, because I think it's an important event. But I had the privilege of participating in several events. One was an education forum organized by Sharon Osbourne, who is the wife of the show's sponsor, Jason Osbourne, who also did like a kick-ass job at Porkfest. Jason is very good at making sure that people are entertained, that their thirsts are quenched. He's a very good host, and he had a nice little, he called it the SACL CAI fun compound that attracted a lot of visitors from what I saw over the course of the week. So that's about it. And all of the participants, all of the panelists will be introduced. It's a good group, including Kelly Halderson from the Unschool Bus, and Bob Murphy from the Mises Institute. Also Eileen Landis, who's a rep in New Hampshire, and Jen Hewson, who is very, very knowledgeable on many different aspects of the process and the problems and the pursuit of real education through homeschooling and unschooling. So it was a great collection of people. I thought this went very well, and thanks for listening.
I think we're ready to begin. That got everybody quiet really quickly. Okay. Welcome to our education forum. Free State Project members are involved in child education on all fronts. We have representatives at the State House fighting against regulations. We have homeschooling families in abundance. We have unschooling families who fully adhere to the concept of child-led education. We have private school founders and families that are fully involved in religious and non-secular schools. The panel here assembled can answer your questions about educating children in the Free State, from dealing with regulations to following an independent path. They can help you find the solution that will work for your family and your children. I will introduce the speakers and then allow each to talk more specifically about his or her area of expertise for a few minutes. Following this, we'll open up the floor for questions. Okay, and a note about the microphones, which I'm not so good at doing myself, is that you have to almost kiss the microphone to get it to fully sound correctly. All right. Okay, I'll start with Jen Hewson. Just do this. This will make more sense. Okay. Jen is a passionate science fanatic who focuses on environmental interpretation and education. She has her BS in animal science with a minor in biology from Purdue University and a master's in environmental and forest biology from State University of New York College of Environmental Science and Forestry. Quite a school. She was an environmental educator at a nature center and a substitute teacher for high school students before becoming a teacher trainer for Wildlife Conservation Society at the Bronx Zoo. During this position, she focused on providing workshops and training for K through 12 grade teachers across the country, utilizing local resources and inquiry techniques that allowed for integration of science into the standard curriculum. She was also an adjunct professor providing undergraduate and graduate classes for education majors that focused on using science in a multidisciplinary and inquiry-based approach. While in New Hampshire, she has been a consultant for a local multi-age preschool, bringing in emergent techniques and science education. She has served on the committee to open an arts-integrated school, provided science courses for homeschool students, and served as a consultant and co-founder of Scholars Academy. Brett Vinote has worked in education for the last 10 years in a variety of capacities. He is currently the vice president of a tutoring and educational consulting business in New Hampshire, where he teaches critical thinking skills, tutors for standardized tests, and helps children overcome school problems. Brett is best known among porcupines for his intelligent, witty, and thought-provoking School Sucks podcast. He also frequently appears on Complete Liberty podcast with author and host, Wes Bertrand. Eileen Landis, New Hampshire has many private schooling options ranging from preschool through high school. Eileen is a mother of two children ages 23 and 9 who have attended private schools in New Hampshire. Eileen examined the private school resources available for her children's unique needs and strengths and has prepared a checklist of pertinent questions to ask when considering a private school. In addition to her interest in private schools and homeschooling, Eileen has been instrumental in working to expand vaccination choice for New Hampshire parents as the co-founder of the New Hampshire Coalition for Vaccination Choice. She can help you navigate the legal and ethical maze of vaccine mandates for children of all ages. Kelly Halderson is a freedom-loving wife, unschooling mother, pacifist, philosopher, writer, photographer, and artist. She enjoys traveling in her family's converted school bus, lovingly coined the Unschool Bus, around the United States, meeting new people, exploring beautiful lands, and spreading the philosophy of freedom. Kelly co-authored a book with her husband Jeff called Skeletons Don't Sleep in 2010. She will be releasing two solo-authored books in 2011, The Survivor's Wife, a companion book to Skeletons, and Unschooling Liberty, a manifesto about freedom in education, parenting, and government. You can visit Kelly's blog at unschoolingliberty.com, where you'll find video, interviews, writing and photographs on life, the universe, and everything. Lastly, we have Bob Murphy. Bob has his PhD in economics from New York University and is a Mises Institute scholar. He works at the Institute for Energy Research in Nashville. He has written numerous books like Lessons for the Young Economist. He teaches classes at academy.mises.org, which has classes for junior high students on up. Okay, I'll open up. I'll let everybody say a few words, and then we'll open up for questions.
Oh, no, it's me first. I, as mentioned, and the little blurb about me is I have two children. They're very diverse ages. I moved to New Hampshire in 2003, and my oldest was in high school. So approaching kids in high school is very, very different than looking at, say, a preschool or an elementary level school. And what I did is, in the process of searching for what private school I would send my daughter to, I came up with this wonderful checklist that I find very useful and I think more than willing to share with anyone on questions to ask with regard to the school and the curriculum and what will best fit your child's need if you are going to look at a private option, whether it's parochial or another form of private education. And I've also been on the other end of the spectrum with my son, who's now 10, and so looking through the preschools and the elementary school levels. So that's about it.
I'm Jen Houston, and you heard everything about me, but I can answer any question on the state of current schools. I have been a part of trying to create private schools, alternative schools in New Hampshire, Scholars Academy being one, that has been semi-successful. And I am will be a homeschooler to three young boys, so I'm very involved in the homeschool activities as far as networking and what's going on with that. I've provided classes for homeschoolers. And if you're coming from a different state, I will say I have trained teachers across the United States, so I kind of have an idea of how education is throughout the different states and how it compares to New Hampshire. And I will say the homeschooling is so different in New Hampshire than anywhere else that I've been. So I can kind of, if you have any questions about what it's like versus where you are, that's something that I could talk about as well.
I'm Kelly Halderson, and I have three teenagers that we unschool and we travel around the country, and we haven't always homeschooled, so I can answer questions transitioning from a private school to unschooling. Also, I could address questions about how you can incorporate the philosophy of freedom and bring it down to your family and extend it in that area. I can answer questions about traveling with your family and anything really regarding unschooling.
Thanks for coming out, everyone. I'm Bob Murphy. You'll have to forgive my appearance. I haven't been getting much sun lately. So I am an adjunct scholar with the Mises Institute. I think most people here know what that is, but if you don't, it's located in Auburn, Alabama, and it's dedicated to the ideas of Ludwig von Mises, Austrian free market economist. What for this crowd, what's relevant is that they have everything they have now, they're putting up online for free in PDF form. So any kind of books that you want or whatever, I mean, if you're homeschooling, that's an easy way to get, you know, you can see the thing, get the PDF, and then decide if you want to buy it. And the books that they do have for sale, it's really cheap, but they're not making money off the books. Beyond just having all the material online for free, and I should mention, it's not just economics now. They've been branching out, so it's all under the umbrella of, you know, in the liberty movement, but it's like philosophy and history, and so it's not just about economics anymore. They've broadened it. As far as the Mises Academy, if you don't know what that is, it's an online courses that we offer. It's not accredited, but they are looking into that. That's one question people have. And it's each instructor just, you know, offers things in his or her expertise. So we have, I, of course, do a bunch of economics courses. Other people, you know, Tom Woods, like, just recently did one, the New Deal. Tom DiLorenzo does stuff on Abraham Lincoln and so forth. So it's David Gordon does stuff on epistemology and other things in terms of philosophy. So there's lots of things in there. It's not just economics. And they're very affordable because it's, you know, we don't have a lot of overhead. And the more students we get, it's obviously that much cheaper for us. So, for example, I'm just doing an 8-week course on Keynes and Krugman that's going to start next week. And that's $145 a student, which, you know, compared to other online stuff is pretty cheap. So as they said in the introduction, it's we offer it, like my course for Introduction to Economics uses a textbook that was literally written for junior at the junior high level, but then other stuff is more geared for like upper level college undergrads.
And hi everybody, I'm Brett Vinat, and the work I do as a private tutor I think has given me some experience obviously navigating and pulling people out of the bureaucratic quicksand pit of the public schools. But I also think that it allows me to incorporate a little bit of what I think education should really be. As probably everybody in this room knows, it's a word that's in desperate need of redefinition. I don't think I'm going to blow anybody's mind when I say what's going on in these schools today, as far as the public schools are concerned, is not education. And that has, even though that's where my experience started, that has moved me to embracing more of these unschooling ideas. And really now, for the first time, even though I've talked about it a lot on the show that I do, I've been able to move that into my career and try this out with a couple of different families in the recent past. And I would be happy to answer, you know, any questions so much about the process of how to get out of the schools and, you know, how to work with the bureaucrats. That's not my area of expertise. The political scene is not either. But I would be really excited to talk about or answer questions about the philosophy of unschooling and my experience in that area so far, which is all relatively recent as far as actual hard experience is concerned. But even though I've worked in education for 10 years and I've seen it from a variety of different angles, I'm not really a big fan of the argument from authority. So when it comes to the show, I think the only thing that really, the only qualification somebody needs to do that is 15,000 hours spent in what most people are considering education today. So, and I think too, you know, like we want this to be constructive, but I also think that it's important that we can really explain to other people as we're trying to spread these ideas and spread this message, the hole that most people are in. Like, it's nice to reach for the stars, but first you have to realize that, you know, the hole, like 90% of people are using the public education system right now. So I think while it's important to be constructive and productive, it's also good to have some strategies for how to talk to people about these ideas who, you know, are not buying into it. Because I think that's an obstacle that a lot of homeschooling and unschooling families run into is isolation. I'm sure it's not as bad as it used to be. But any of those topics, I'm happy to speak on. Thanks.
Okay, so just come up to the microphone if you have a question, but I'll start out. I have two young kids, and we're in New Hampshire, and I hate the idea of having to report to the state on what we're doing. So I was wondering if you could address the specific regulations that are required for homeschoolers in New Hampshire, such as the ages that you have to comply, or what you would recommend as far as going around the system.
Okay, so in New Hampshire, you do not have to report specifically until they're in first grade. So kindergarten is just recently been passed to have public kindergarten, so really the state hasn't been regulating that as of now. You can do whatever you want, apparently, until they're in first grade. Then in first grade, you have to send a letter that says, I'm taking care of my child's education, and then that gets registered with both the school and then the state, and they send like a form letter back that says, we understand that that's happening. On the reporting end of that, right now New Hampshire has two options for parents that are homeschooling. One is to just use a state test, standardized test at the end of the year. If your kid passes the test, that's it. You send the results to the school and they report it to the state. If you don't like to test, which a lot of parents don't like to do, you can do a portfolio. And this is a very wide range of things that can be put in a portfolio. For unschooling families, sometimes it's a blog. Sometimes it's just paragraphs that they're writing describing what their kids are doing because they're not following a set curriculum. So they don't have, you know, a worksheet or something that they're showing. So you can just write a blog or a paragraph form. And what the state is looking for is that you're showing that your child is improving and can show that they are advancing in their education. It's very broad. The problem with portfolios is that you do have to get it approved by a teacher in the state. So a teacher in the state goes through your portfolio and then will talk to you about it. Some are very lenient and just go through it and say, okay, this is good, here's the check, and I will send to the state that it's done. And some will sit down and talk with you and say, well, this would show that your child is, you know, showing that they might have a need in this area, or they've spent a lot of time in math and not a lot of time in writing or language arts, something of that nature. Do you have a different... Okay. But that's basically how the state of New Hampshire does it now.
I could add a few things to that. She's got it pretty much. It's RSA 193A is the homeschooling law in New Hampshire. And there's actually a third option, and the third option is more open. It's something agreed upon between you and the district. That's the other option, which can be as little as, you know, I know your kid, he's okay, and I'm going to vouch for him. We've been homeschooling in New Hampshire for 6 years. Next year will be our seventh. And actually, we've chosen to no longer register with the state. And I think that should be presented as an option because there is some consensus that the homeschooling regulation law is unconstitutional and doesn't abide by the New Hampshire Constitution. And oftentimes I've found that people that I've met that have complied with the state by following their rules actually run into more problems than people that refuse to comply. So I just wanted to present that as another option.
Follow-up question.
Not approved by the state.
I noticed just fairly recently there was a lot of homeschoolers rushing to the state capitol to try to thwart some laws. I also noticed that New Hampshire was moved from... there's some organization that keeps track of various states, and it was moved from green to red because of all the different efforts to try to hamstring homeschooling. So I'm curious as to what's really going on in the states and what's happening politically.
Well, some of the more liberty-oriented reps submitted some great pieces of legislation this year for strengthening the rights of homeschoolers. Unfortunately, many of those ended up going to a study committee and literally dying in the House, and the ones that passed the House went over to the Senate, and they died in the Senate. So we've tried to make many inroads for the homeschoolers. There was a bill just yesterday voted on after committee of conference. Committee of conference means it's passed from the House, and then it goes over to the Senate, and the Senate passes it, but they changed it. And so they have to get together and come to a form that they agree on. And that would allow parents to, in a public school, be able to opt out of curricula. And that, I believe, is going to the governor. So it did pass the House yesterday. But what's been happening is that great pieces of legislation are getting introduced, but it's looking at some of the other reps that are on the committee and finding that they're dying in the committee. So I know that there are some other pieces of legislation coming in for next year session. So if you are living in New Hampshire, that's something to think about writing to your reps and getting them to, especially on the education committee, is getting involved with writing them and supporting legislation that will open up things for homeschoolers.
You actually also that you mentioned the national organization. That's the HSLDA. And New Hampshire was never technically a green state, which means you have no regulation whatsoever. They did shift from an orange, which is a high level, to red. So we're actually in New Hampshire. If you choose to follow RSA 193A, you are, if you choose to follow it, you are actually, we are actually one of the sixth most regulated states in the whole country. So there's a lot. I mean, we're very free in other areas, and but that's one area that really needs people to move here and fight for more homeschooling freedom, because it is, as of now, we don't have it.
I'm not really interested in what the bureaucrats' rules are, but what are the consequences for not following them? Because, my kid has not been, stamped, numbered, spindled, or folded, or mutilated. So I'm wondering, what do they know? What's going to happen if they do find out? My in-laws live in another state. My wife tends to commute. Does my child actually live in New Hampshire? Those kind of questions.
I can answer a little bit of that. I'm sorry. If you choose not to file, like I've said before, the people that do register with the state, I have found, have far more complications, and usually it ends up with like a probation, because they haven't, their homeschooling program is put on probation because they haven't submitted their testing material in time at the end of the state. I've talked to people that have done that. I have yet to meet somebody who has failed to register, as we do, or openly chooses not to register, who have had any kind of problems. There's many other people in the state that could, that could answer that question a little more in depth. But I've never had anybody, as I said, that has failed to register that have run into problems. It's people that choose to follow the state regulations that have to nitpick and have problems with the individual districts.
To just support that statement, is one of the most outspoken supporters of homeschooling, who has a blog. She's up at the State House for almost every public hearing, whether it's in the House or in the Senate. She does not register her children, and she's homeschooled here in New Hampshire for, I want to say something like 18 or 20 years, and she's never had an issue.
So what happens if you, whatever reason, you file some piece of paperwork, and then you're on probation? What does that mean?
Well, some of the, and maybe you know the laws better than I do verbatim, but from what the homeschooling families that are registering are most scared of is a lot of the bureaucratic language, which is what we were trying to change, because it was saying things like, it's a parent's, it's not really their right, but they have the ability to oversee the education. In other words, a lot of the laws that we were trying to change is that it was a parent's right to educate versus the parents have this kind of like iffy ability to oversee it. So the fear is that if you're not doing the job, then they would say you must put them in an institution where that job is being done. So you would go on probation saying, just like in schools, which would say you have X amount of time to get them to show that you're advancing your child in education. And if you're not doing that satisfactorily, then the state would actually have control to say they need to be placed in some place, either public or private, that is going to do that. That's the fear.
Gotcha. This question is sort of about unschooling versus homeschooling. We're going to homeschool, certainly, and I'm not sure about the whole unschooling thing. I'm a little concerned about it. Obviously, my child is directing his learning, but I tend to encourage in some ways. So there's some way to break the child if you homeschool too much or unschool too much, or incorporate these things anyway.
Well, I would say that you're already in schooling, right? He's three?
He's three and loves puzzles and reading.
And you found that you've been able to use his enthusiasm for these things to lead into new things, and it's a continuous.
I'm just trying to keep up reading the books that he wants to read. I really, honestly, leading main thing, I'm just, he probably wants to read 30 books a day.
So, and this is with nothing formal so far.
Right.
This is with no instruction or no guidelines. So what do you want to change?
I don't know. I want to make sure that he gets, sometimes I think, what about math? He shows no interest in math. He can count up to 20 or something like that and does so on his own. But, if he could read words, I'm just kind of wondering, Sesame Street has him looking at numbers and stuff.
I just hear in your question this concern that I have a lot, because I work with a student and it's much more of an unschooling environment. And it's pretty much led, by his interests and where he wants to take things. And then, of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, like, oh, how are we going to produce a portfolio for this and show a school things that they're going to want to see? And he spent about 2 years in the public school system trying to do math on their terms, mm-hmm. which was totally forced on him. And he's incredibly resistant to even, like, counting numbers. That upsets him. So I think that there are obviously functional math skills that we all need to learn at some point in our life, but I always feel like I still have it stuck in my head that it has to happen with a certain timetable on a certain schedule, because that's how, I mean, you know, the schools that I worked in, you know, I worked around public school and in private school, and it's the checklist every place you go where this happens, then this happens, then this happens. If people fall behind, that's a problem. If people are ahead, that's a problem. And I think one of the things that people who are more looking at actually homeschooling, who actually want to teach and be more hands-on with a curriculum, per se, with their children, and I need to do it too, because, I mean, I worked in formal schooling for like 6 years, is that it would be great if we could move away from these timetables, because I think that we have to start looking at the issue of nothing is ever good when it's kind of imposed. And obviously I know that it's not going to be imposed, but
So one thing that I've heard from other homeschool parents about unschooling is the deep concern that their child might be that 0.01% that might have made it to Harvard if only they had gone, you know, done the things the right way and gone through the system and taken the tests and things like that. So if you don't take the tests or do the homeschool curriculum or send them to a private school or whatever, they won't make it to Harvard. Is there any kind of, you know, addressing that?
I'll just real quick, and then I'll pass the mic. I think that these are the kind of things that we hope to, with some kind of educational evolution, that we can break away from these extrinsic motivators. I mean, Harvard is not an intrinsically motivated goal for anybody from the age that they understand the whole concept of growing up and being successful or getting a job. So the shift from institutionalized schooling to unschooling is about this idea that we take extrinsic motivators, like grades and stickers, and maybe it starts with cookies, I don't know, and we start as facilitators or educators or parents, we start really trying to get a sense and observe what they want, and that'll change, and you have to adapt, you know, I think as time goes by. And of course, everybody should know this, I'm not a parent. So, you know, I want to be clear about that. And my conclusions about this, I've just gathered from talking to other parents who've done this and, you know, seeing different approaches. But I think that would be my response to that question, is that that's the result of a society that has been through this, you know, mass indoctrination, institutionalized schooling, that says, hey, what's going on as far as your hopes and your dreams and your desires doesn't matter. We have a checklist. We have worksheets that need to be filled out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do that, you get an A, you get a sticker, you get, you know, 15 minutes outside. And it's a move from the extrinsic to the intrinsic and put more of a focus and keep explaining this to people. I think it's really important.
Jen, did you have something?
Yeah.
Because I personally came from a very in-the-system position, working with teachers in school systems, and I all the time deal with homeschoolers who are asking the same question, like, well, what do you mean unschooling? What do you mean radical unschooling? What do you mean there's, like, all these, like, little sects that are around? And I want to say that although in theory I agree with all of that, I think there still is that fear, like, are they going to be successful as the rest of society changes? You know, that time frame of when is the rest of society going to see it, how we see it, and, you know, how is that I'm going to make that future the best for my child? And I think the best thing that I have learned from unschoolers and that I try to pass to people who are on the edge or are thinking about it or are scared of it is the whole idea of the unschooling revolution and the unschooling movement was that they don't lose that love of education. So that love of learning, if you talk to people who were in the public school system, so like the kids that Brett's working with or someone else, what happens is they get frustrated at some point because they're ahead and their teacher says, sit in the back of the room, wait for everyone else. or they can't do it and they don't have the resources to sit there one-on-one and say, here's where you are, how can I get you here? And they don't care about what their favorite thing to do is, so they don't ever say, well, instead of counting on your fingers, use Legos. You love to make Legos. Let's do a whole Lego thing. How many Legos do we need to make this? You know, instead of doing that, they're taking, and the kids automatically retract. So they lose this love of learning. If you're in an unschooling environment, I think the best thing that can be said is that they want to continue. They may not look at Harvard as, that's my motivation, but because they never lose that love of learning, it's like a natural continuum. So it's like one of those things where I would love that my kids never lose it. And me personally, I'm still on that journey. Like, my kids are very young, and I'm still on that. I have curriculum. I've also trained teachers not to use the standard curriculum. So, you know, like, I feel like I'm, like, right on that edge of, I've trained them how to take that curriculum and modify it. And I think a lot of homeschoolers are right at that point, where they're using a curriculum because they have fear in themselves that, I don't know calculus, or I don't know math, or I don't know, you know, I just, how am I going to teach them that when they get there? So I think they have a curriculum, and I think a lot of times it's the communities that are helping to overcome that, you know, should I use a curriculum and stick right to it and check off the list, versus should I go to an unschooling child-led or emergent, how I would call it, emergent curriculum that's going off of their interest base. And I think sometimes it takes a community that you're not alone, like, to reach out into that community and say, like, I am, there are three groups of homeschoolers that I am all the time interacting with and doing activities with, and we are always saying, oh, my kids love to do that, let's go out and do that. And it ends up being an unschooling experience. But I think they eventually learn that they're unschooling, even though they think that they're not.
So are there any cases that we know of unschoolers making it to some, you know, major university?
Okay. I was at an unschooling conference just last year, one that was my husband and I are speaking at this fall, or this August anyway.
Hi.
Yeah, Jeff. My husband, Jeff. And one of the people speaking there, her daughter went to Harvard. And what happened is, and one thing I think that's really important that I don't think it has addressed is that besides focusing on the love of learning and that trying not to stifle that and that kids they just have this drive and motivation that you don't want to crush and that it's all about the love of learning. It's also about what their environment is and what their parents are interested in. And it's about the relationship between you and your child. And if you are interested in something and you have a good relationship, then your kids are going to be interested. So if you have books around and and you read a lot or you like math and you're doing math, my husband and I are always doing math games. We never ever make the kids do any math whatsoever. And they can barter, and my daughter's out there walking dogs for money, and you know, doing, and that has, none of that came from, you need to go out and earn some money, or you need to go out and do something. They just have that desire to do those things themselves. And it's about practicality. So if you have something that you want to do, you're going to have, and you're going out there, my daughter wanted a hat. So she's like, oh, I don't really have any money, what am I going to do? Oh, I don't have enough time to make stuff to sell, so, oh, I could walk some dogs. And she's putting up signs and walking around and making money so that she can go buy some hat to match her dog's hat. And think about all those things that, you know, that requires to do. She's 13, and I'm not telling her, you gotta sit down and do this math paper. And a lot of what she's doing requires math and critical thinking. And none of it came from me or my husband. And you'll mean, Harvard, sorry. So we were at this unschooling conference, and there was a woman there who, her daughter, went on to Harvard. And what happened is she had never had a math class her entire life. She was completely unschooled from birth, and she took a Harvard Extension class and was her first math class ever. And according to this parent, and she's just graduated from Harvard, so she must be like 21. She took her first math class ever at Harvard Extension and got an A and was actually helping the other kids figure out how to do it because they were so stuck in what they, and the other adults, because it's Harvard Extension, so they have adult classes. And then usually they don't shift on to Harvard College, but she was able to, since she took those classes when she was like 16, 17, she was able to then apply to Harvard College, and she went and graduated. Or she's graduating this year, I think.
The other thing behind, you know, sending your, you've got to send your kid to private schools or homeschool them or whatever, is because they might get scholarships. Have you ever heard this excuse? You know, you can send your kid to a bureaucratic school so that they can get free bureaucratic schooling in the future.
This is going to be actually for your previous concern. So I didn't teach at Harvard, but I did teach 3 years at Hillsdale College, which is a liberal arts school in Michigan. And there, it's, I definitely could tell when I found out, like, of my students, which ones were homeschooled. They were, without a doubt, they weren't necessarily my best students, but they knew how to write an essay. They understood what the point of an essay was. Whereas there were a lot of students, they didn't even get the concept of, no, you're supposed to pick a, you know, a thesis and argue and defend it. Whereas the homeschool kids, they all got that. They were good students in the sense not, I mean, they did get good grades, but beyond that, like, they actually cared, like, they had read stuff elsewhere and would argue with me in my office after class if I thought I said something that didn't make sense. They said, oh, what about, how does that relate to this thing I'm taking in this class? Whereas, you know, other students were there because, oh, well, I'm a business major, so I gotta take Econ 101, and this is awful, and I gotta get, you know, checkbox so I can get out here and get a job. And so the homeschooling kids were not like that at all. So and there was even like a stigma, like other professors would make fun of the homeschool kids, like saying, yeah, they think they're so, you know, smart and special. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, so what, you want kids going around thinking they're stupid? You know what I mean? Like that's, even their stereotype was actually a compliment, even though they meant it as an insult. So, I'd like to say I wasn't at Harvard teaching, but from the students that went through to that mid-level, small liberal arts school, the fact that you had maybe gone through high school not having been just homeschooled was not a strike against you. It actually made you, I think, an all-around better student.
I don't know if anyone wants to answer his scholarship question.
Back in Chicago, I was teaching genetics at the University of Illinois in Chicago, and that was one of the go to a bureaucratic school. You know, if you did really well in high school, you were guaranteed a slot in the university system automatically with free scholarships. So yeah, that is happening. I don't believe it's happening here in New Hampshire, but I know that it was the case in Illinois.
Are we done?
The question was entitlements. I just want to be, or the scholarships.
That was Mark's question.
And I think that one of the things that I've realized through my career, and I want to keep reiterating that I'm not a parent, and I'm glad there are parents here to speak for some of these things, and I don't ever want to make it sound like I'm, you know, telling a parent what they should do, because I just don't have that experience. But as a professional, I think the more we decide that we want to work outside of what's conventional and outside of what's mainstream, the more we have to accept the fact that we might have to make some sacrifices, that some of the carrots that are available to people who want to play by the rules and do things like everybody else does might not be swinging in front of us, you know. And I think that once upon a time, basically, long story short, once upon a time there was a little group of people who wanted to control other people. And you know, first they used rocks, and then they used clubs, and then they used swords, and then they used guns, and then they used entitlements. You know, and that's pretty much where we are today. And I understand, I want to say that I understand, but I can't even imagine how difficult it is for some parents to exist in this world where so-and-so got a scholarship or so-and-so got into this school and they play by all these rules. And I don't know, maybe one of you can speak to it. Maybe you just don't surround yourself with the people who are, you know, continuously reaching for these, you know, supposed rewards that society. Yeah, carrots, you know, and this goes back to the intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation. But I don't know how difficult it is, and I'd like to hear some feedback from parents, actually, about, is that a real challenge? I mean, as a professional, I see people who work in the public system, and they are, you know, I'm not, set for life is not the right expression, but they are, at least, they know they're not going to lose their job, they have great benefits, their retirement is paid for, and when you make sacrifices, you don't get that stuff. And sometimes you don't remember, like, the importance of the sacrifices that you're making. You just kind of, for me anyway, I look at the things that I'm not getting. And that can kind of be difficult sometimes. So I don't know.
I have some things, but I should probably go on to
Oh, sure.
Okay. So I wanted to
obviously right now we know that the way to get out of the indoctrination system is to homeschool our kids, but I was wondering how to envision a future societal shift, because obviously not every single person can homeschool their kids in a voluntary society. So what do you think, like a more free opportunity for not publicly funded schools, but voluntary schools would look like for parents who are not going to homeschool their kids, but, you know, how do you guys see the future, if you understand my question?
Okay. I'm sure, actually, there are opportunities for that. I mean, obviously, there's private schools, so you could go to the private school route if you have that ability financially, which some of us don't have. But there are co-ops, and I have to say, in New Hampshire, there are several. Outside of where I live in Manchester, there is actually a building that is for a homeschooling co-op. So parents can either choose to pay or they can volunteer time. And that could be cleaning up or it could be teaching a class. And I think that works really well. I think because it's not forcing the kids to take a certain curriculum of classes. They choose what classes they're interested in, what they want to do. They have a community then together. And in New Hampshire, that idea of communities and co-op is very apparent. From someone from New York, who I would have never even thought of homeschooling my child in New York, to be honest. Like, I would have no support. I would be fighting a bureaucratic system that would probably have CPS in my house. Like, I can't even imagine that obstacle. But in New Hampshire, it seems like so common. Like, even when I, you know, I was a consultant for this multi-age preschool, so it was 3 to 6-year-olds, so they were leaving at kindergarten and going into a first grade somewhere. And so many of these parents at the end say, I think maybe I'll homeschool. And this was not a community of what I would consider like the homeschool community. These were people who had money, who were sending them to a private school and, you know, had all these benefits. And instead of sending them to another private school, were saying, I'm thinking about this because I don't want to go back to this, and one of my pet peeves, that age-restrictedness, that I can only take, you know, classes with 5-year-olds because I'm 5, which is part of the reason my kid no longer goes to a school, because he said he can't do addition because he's 5 and only 5-year-olds can do addition. So makes no sense to me, but that whole idea of a co-op where it's a community of kids, it's a community of parents, we all support each other, and it's about their interest and what they want to do, and it doesn't matter whether they're 6 or 12. If they're interested in that class, then the 12-year-olds end up doing amazing things for 6-year-olds and vice versa and all along the spectrum. I'm a big believer in multi-age communities, and I think that is where I would see that evolving to. Like, there are co-ops and that we're together and we're supporting each other, whether it's outside of the system and we're not registering or it's inside of the system, but that is where I would see a community going. It wouldn't be that strict. I'm training you, sit down, raise your hand, and you have to take X, Y, and Z. You have to mark it off. It would be more of that co-op community, and there are, they do exist in New Hampshire.
With regard to private schools, my oldest, who's 23 now, from kindergarten till the time we moved here, we had 5 relocations in 10 years. So we really didn't live anywhere for 3 years. And so we kept her in a parochial school so that she could, you know, the uniforms kind of changed, but the expectations and kind of the coursework was a little bit, there was some familiarity, even though it was multiple changes. And we did find there are scholarships available for many, many private schools if you can't afford. So just because you look at that price and, oh, gosh, tuition is this, almost every one of the private schools offers some type of some type of a scholarship. Some of them even allow you to use volunteer hours to offset the cost of tuition. Some allow you to pay part of the tuition and then use the other part as you would call as a donation. You get a tax write-off on that. There's ways of working around having to pay a full tuition with any private school. And with regard to pulling that and meeting their needs is my oldest did very well with the worksheets and very structured learning, and my youngest is a very visual spatial learner, so that doesn't work at all with him. And he had gone to private schools, and one of the schools he was at, it's not uncommon for a parent to pull the child out for a year or two and homeschool him and then put him back in. So I know many families that have done that. So the child is struggling in fourth grade. You pull them out from fourth and fifth grade and teach to what they may be challenged with, or help them feel more confident about the things that their strengths are in. And then if you choose to put them back in and put them back in, there's many schools that are willing to work with you with that here in New Hampshire.
Well, I'm currently a certified teacher in New York State, special education and K-12. With my ideology, I'm not a good fit for New York. So my ultimate goal is to be here in part of the Free State Project, and I'm torn between trying to be part of the New Hampshire State schooling, or what's preventing me is leaving the benefits, the security of this job that I've had for 10 years. Despite their wanting me out the door, I've been able to use that protection to keep my job. And it's really been a struggle because it's been ideology, but they really control your fate. I've seen some things. It was called a 913, and I was required to see their doctors because of a personality difference with the teacher. And I was required to submit my medical records, my psychiatric records. If I did not do that, I would have been fired for insubordination. I was fortunate in that their doctors also let me have the ability to currently stay in this job. But I obviously need to leave this job because of those many different reasons. Both my ideology doesn't fit, my love for what's being shown here, but having money for a house and groceries and all that is a reality that's kind of my fear and obstacle from making the next step.
Come to New Hampshire. We'd love to have teachers.
Okay.
Especially at places like Scholars Academy. I mean, if you're going to stay in the system, it is fairly easy. I mean, even when I was thinking of a job here, and I had not been a school teacher, but because of my education and the fact that I taught teachers, I basically sent a letter to New Hampshire State and said, can I apply for a teacher job? And they said, absolutely, anything K through 12. So I'm sure, you know, as far as opportunity is there. But I would say there's also great private schools here that are, and again, like, there are a lot of schools that are based on a more individualized curriculum, a more multi-age classroom, and if you're comfortable, because your specialty is that.
I did special education for self-contained, emotionally disturbed, learning yes. disabled, 8 students, 1 teacher, 1 aide, and yeah. I'm familiar with doing portfolios and all that. So I would think I'd have a great skill set for some of the unschool parents that are concerned with some of that portfolio review and kind yeah. of consultation type
stuff. And there
stuff.
Might be a niche for that. The other thing I will say is that people in New Hampshire, if you're ingenuitive enough and you're willing to put yourself out there, you kind of find these connections and opportunities, much like I have. Like, well, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to stay at home now. What am I going to do? How are we going to live? And then, like, I met homeschoolers, and they're like, wow, you taught all this science stuff. How about science classes? And I was like, yeah, I could do science. But, I mean, mm-hmm. it just works out like that, you know, building of community. And this is the place to start with all the Free Staters who have moved like myself, making those connections and getting into those communities and feeling it out and seeing how it is. And, I mean, constantly our homeschoolers looking for who's the right person to look at my portfolio because I don't want X, Y, and Z. I want someone who has a good reputation. I want this and that. Well,
I'm sorry, would having a New Hampshire State credentials be necessary to review that kind of stuff? If
I believe through the state you have to be a New Hampshire State teacher. It okay. is not difficult, though, to become that if you already are one in New York.
Yeah.
There's actually some other states that New Hampshire recognizes. So there are some, I'm not sure if New York is one of them. Okay. I do know Maine is.
Okay. It'll tell you which ones it recognizes.
But there are a lot of opportunities for you, as she said. You know, teaching at a private school, you could do consulting for, I mean, there's just so many different things that you could do if you just try to get outside that little box of having that house and that security
to
and that all that
a
stuff.
Small box and,
and all their security. Yeah. You know?
All right.
They're Sorry. They're just looking for that behaviorist. So since you have that unique background, there are a lot of public schools who do a lot of contracts with consultants. And one of them is behavior, coming up with IEPs and things like that. And how do I deal with that? How could I make someone who is emotionally distraught still fit in the public school system? So that's another opportunity that it sounds like you might have a background to look into. And that is big right now, like because they've dropped all funding for gifted, but the emotionally distraught and the developmentally disabled are still getting a lot of the funding, so they will be looking for that.
This is one of those paperwork type questions that I actually can't answer. There is reciprocity, I think, between New York and New Hampshire. And I think that tends to be somewhat regional as far as certification is concerned, where maybe it wouldn't be the case. Like, I've tutored certification tests for teachers in California. I mean, I used to tutor the certification tests. And there would be reciprocity between, California and Massachusetts, and there'd be like these weird sort of remote plucks out into other parts of the country where there would be, but regionally I think it's pretty, like, you could expect that there'd be reciprocity between Vermont, New Hampshire, New York, and Massachusetts, so on and so forth. So, from my experience, because I worked at a school very similar to the one that you did from 2000 to 2004, and really my experience in the public schools has come after leaving classroom teaching altogether and working as a tutor over the course of the last 5 years. My last teaching job at one of these schools with one of those student populations, I left in 2006 and I knew I couldn't go back. And this isn't even public school, this is a private school. But the way I did it was very hasty, you know, and if I could go back and do it again or help somebody learn from my mistakes in the present, I would be, obviously I think it's easy to beat yourself up about some of the stuff that you're involved in and how you're benefiting from this. And it's a shame, too, that sometimes we're pretty deep into this when we start to realize we have to start learning our way back out of it. And you know, the deeper we get, I mean, like, that's the entitlements that I was speaking to earlier, but or the benefits of, you know, being in the union. But even if you, I mean, I think even if you came here and just took that reciprocity and, you know, spent a year working in New Hampshire's public schools, I don't. There's no difference to me in any way that really matters between New York and Massachusetts. I think there is a difference in working as a behavior modification specialist. Okay, like, can we get children who are having problems better fit the mold of this indoctrination system? I wouldn't do that.
No,
I'd say, you know, like, New York public school teacher, hitman, that, you know, but
experience is with the loss of the love of learning. That's where most of my students have had, because they've been pushed and forced when either cognitively it was beyond them or the modality that it was approached in caused fear, and they would do anything to preserve their self-esteem to just learning was their enemy, and that destroyed everything I believed in. They made learning the enemy to most of these children.
Because learning is equated with school.
Yeah.
And they're actually they're closer to the opposite.
And the way you're talking about with the rewarding the extrinsically with, it's really destroying many kids, and I'd like to go the route that you guys are doing, but...
Well, I think, too, you know, when I talked about being hasty, there was this idea, this idealism in me that, like, now that I get these things, my actions need to be perfectly consistent with all of my principles right away. Well, you know, that's a hike, and I go into a cave, right? With the world that we live in today, that's impossible. And I think that I wish I would have cut myself a little bit more slack, and I wish I would have been a little bit more careful, because when you're doing things that, you know, sabotage your own security, financial or otherwise, this is an individual thing, you know, right? So self-sacrifice should never be a part of that. And cutting yourself some slack about where you are, what you didn't know as you got into that position, and now at least, you know, giving yourself a pat on the back for being willing to work your way out, I think that's good enough, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate all your answers.
Thank you.
Hi.
I'm just wondering, my wife and I are moving from California, and I'm interested in getting into teaching. My background is technical, and I was wondering, especially private school, I'd really prefer not to teach in public school. My background is technical. I have a technical master's degree, but no education experience. So what would I need? Do I need to get a license? What would I need to do in order to get a job at a private school?
It's very easy, again, if you go to the NHDOE, because of your background and you have a master's that was just like me, it's very easy. They basically, you write them a letter of why you want to do it, and you're based on your background, why you want to do it, and they send you a letter back that says you're fine to apply for any job that's education-wise, to be honest. I mean,
really?
Okay. It is very easy to do because, and this is a trend in most states, actually, wherever you move now, the trend is to get people who are in the actual field. We would love to have them, especially if it's technical or science. Much rather have you have a master's degree in that and be teaching the kids than have a master's in education and take two classes in science and be a science teacher. So the DOE would love to have you, I'm sure, and that gives you the okay. You can get around that in private schools. You don't necessarily have to be certified.
Mm-hmm.
It is a huge debating point in every board. Like the board I was on, half of us said, why would we want someone who is certified in New Hampshire? Because that meant they had to have an education degree, which to us means very little. So some private schools don't even require you to have that. They would be basing it on your experience, your personality, anything else that they're interviewing for. So you can look, and sometimes the private schools will not require. They might require a master's degree, but it doesn't have to be master's of education.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else that I should do as far as taking courses or anything in order to make myself more appealing for private schools, or can I just get that permission from the DOE and then
have that permission from the DOE, that the schools pretty much just accept your application. Like it depends on what route. If you're going into private schools will list their job opportunities in various places.
Right.
All the public schools are on the public school board thing. Once you have that letter that says you can apply, they just accept you as if you have a degree in education.
Gotcha.
You can always make yourself more marketable. I mean, right. We always look for people, you know, like if this summer, you know, you were teaching a class somewhere, that's always good. You know, anytime you can get your foot in the door where you've actually taught in some capacity is better than not teaching in some capacity, where you can show either from a portfolio or, you know, something that you did with whatever age you want to work with. That's always.
Any teaching experience at all?
I've done a lot of tutoring in a lot of different, you know, contexts. Only a couple times have I taught in front of a class, but most of my experience would be one-on-one or one-on-two or three tutoring.
In 2007, I was working for a company as a tutor in Massachusetts, and I actually came up here. We were trying to move some of the business into the southern New Hampshire region. And I went to my old high school and actually wound up having a meeting with my old guidance counselor, because she was the contact person. And she said, Brett, you really need to get certified, you know? And you should really have that permission slip, Brett. And I started to think about it, and at the time I said, boy, you know, I could really help this business more and maybe, you know, move my career forward a little bit. This was only like less than 5 years ago. And I started looking into it. And New Hampshire versus Vermont, versus Massachusetts, where I was originally planning to be certified as a grad student 8 or 9 years ago, had a very, very strict kind of formula, procedure for the path to licensure that led you into the public school. But New Hampshire had a little bit more flexibility with that. And there was like, you know, they could take experience and take credentials, and that could make it easier for you to get the licensure if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
This is hard for me to even talk about. but you know, I've been an educator in this state since 2007, and I've asked for no one's permission except the people who contract with me voluntarily. And I think that there's lots of opportunities for somebody like you. What's your background?
My physics and math.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I tutor for the SAT, which at first I didn't like to do at all. Now I love it because I think there's so many opportunities for logical reasoning and, you know, critical thinking skills in that test. For someone like you, you know, there are so many opportunities. People need that.
because their kids are not getting it. The whatever percent of kids, I mean, I'm sure it's less than in New Hampshire as far as percentage of kids in public school than it is nationwide, I would hope. But whatever that is, 85-90% of people who have these their kids in these schools, they realize that when it comes time for these higher level skills to be utilized, that their kids don't have them. And there's a huge market for that. It's like I can't even get a big enough. There's so much competition. It's hard to get a big enough share of it to make a living. And that's in this little state, you know. So, I mean, there's plenty of I should be thanking the government school system because that made me a career, you know. But there's plenty of opportunities for that in this state, I think, as well. And you know, I mean, I don't know what your time frame is either. A lot might change in the next couple of years as far as what kind of opportunities and what kind of networks people can build here. I mean, we're working on not this specific group of people, but I'm working with a group of parents, the New Hampshire, actually, probably is this group of people, the New Hampshire Relaxed Homeschoolers, all right, members of that to build a kind of a co-op in the Concord area. So these opportunities certainly exist, and in 2 years there could be 3, 4, 5, 6 projects like that going on.
Gotcha.
So, right,
so your focus is mainly on tutoring and then organizing classes just with parents signing their students up who need to learn, prepare, for example,
yeah,
for the SAT.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm kind of a firefighter too, you know, like the report cards come and, Billy has a C, you know. Billy's not smart, he has a C. And I don't like doing that work, and that work's gotten a lot more difficult to do. I really like to do the standardized test stuff, and I do other stuff like, you know, writing, and I work with homeschoolers, so I'm glad I've kind of gotten away from the conversation with Billy about how the C is really not good.
Right.
But I'll pass on the mic.
Thanks.
I'm just stepping back a little bit just to confirm for some people. My husband and I homeschooled our kids through high school. They're adults now, and they're married, and they're on their own. And they both went to college. So I just wanted to confirm a couple things that were said here. One was, like, scholarships. There were some scholarships that our kids were not able to get because they didn't go to an accredited school. But there's a lot of other things out there. Like, I'm in Indiana, by the way. One of the scholarships my daughter got was one through Indiana Pacers basketball team. They offered a scholarship, $1,500 scholarship for community service or volunteer stuff. And my kids, whenever they did scholarship stuff for volunteer hours, which is a big deal now even with government schools, my kids had a lot of time to do volunteer work. So, like, their hours just killed everybody. So they got those scholarships. And they did that the church organization that we were in too. They had these big scholarships that they gave out, and they got those as well. And one thing about getting into colleges, don't be intimidated because it wasn't me, it was my daughter, but she really went in high school. She was very much on the unschooling route, and she did her own thing. And we lived close to a commuter campus. She took a few classes there, but she wanted to apply to some other colleges, so she did. And one of them called her. She went and visited them, and they said, oh, she did a portfolio. She made this big portfolio of photos and narrative of what she did while she was in high school. Both of our kids, they started when they were first and second grade, so by the time they got in high school, we just said, sure, high school, what are you going to do? So we just facilitated whatever they needed. So anyway, she did that, and she applied to these schools, and one of them said, well, this looks pretty good. So she went up, and she had these interviews with them. They wanted to talk to her, and she did that, and, you know, it's like some movie, you know, they came out the door, ha, ha, you know, patting on the back and stuff, so they ended up accepting her. Then another college called her. It was, I think that was Xavier in Cincinnati, and they said, well, you'd really, your lab science area doesn't look very strong to us. We're not really sure about that. And they called her on the phone, and she said, well, you know what? I know that my portfolio is strong. I know that I can handle your college. And if you don't want me on this basis, then that's fine with me. I'm not giving you anything else, and I'm not doing anything. And she hung up the phone, and a couple days later, she got an acceptance letter. So just let your kids go. Let them develop. Let them grow. It works. I'm here to tell you that it works. So just a little pep talk.
Hi. We plan to homeschool when we move to New Hampshire, but I was wondering if you all might address one of the common concerns, I suppose, about homeschooling, which is socialization. Now, certainly the co-op idea sounds really interesting, but you know, just interested in your thoughts on that topic in general.
Yeah, I'm sure these ladies have a lot more to say, but very quickly, that was the other thing about my experience at the undergrad level. The students who had been homeschooled, one of them truly was like the life of the party kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it's the exact opposite of what you would have thought. Like, I think he was the president of his fraternity even. Maybe you're thinking, well, I don't want my kid to go into a frat, I don't know. But the point is just, it was the opposite of what you would have predicted in terms of socialization. So I think that stereotype is not correct, at least when I was seeing kids at the college level.
Just real quick, I have a question for clarification, and then I'll pass the mic because this question's loaded with plenty of conclusions. Can you tell me a little bit more about the socialization that's going on or the benefits of that socialization for people who have not chosen to homeschool or unschool?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're considering about whether or not to do private school at some point, you know, to transition from homeschool to private school at some point. I went to private school when I grew up, and I think there is something about having, you know, a group of kids around you roughly the same age whom you sort of grow up with and who, you know, become close friends. Yeah, well, that too, exactly. I'm just wondering, I'm sure that's possible with homeschoolers as well. I just wonder if the, you know, the stability, the year-on-year stability might be an issue. And we only have one daughter, so it's not as if she's going to get a lot of that just from her siblings. So, yeah, some issues like that.
Well, with siblings, you wouldn't have that exact age group anyway. And I would say I'm right with right there that what kind of socialization are you looking for? Do you want to have your kids in a classroom with 20, 30 other kids their exact same age? And how does that even remotely represent what the real world is? I mean, I spend my time, and my kids spend their time, talking with adults that are 30 years older than me, 20 years younger than me, and I learned so much from so many people of so many different ages and have made some very close friendships with people of varying ages that it seems rather silly to me to expect kids to have this very narrow group of you all have to be the same age. We've been homeschooling for 6 years. As I said, this will be our seventh, and ours are teenagers. I would say that the only challenge as far as socialization goes, which I don't really even like that term because I think of it being just, I'm going to train these kids to behave in a specific way and not be individuals. But the only challenges I think that I've had and we've had as a family is when they get to be teenagers. They want to explore and meet more kids, and oftentimes homeschoolers go to school when they hit high school. So you have like all their friends that they've made sort of drop off. Not to say that they don't have friends that are younger or friends that are adults or whatever. But so it's slightly challenging. We found a solution to that in that we're just very involved in many communities, and we travel and we meet new people, and they make lots more connections. As I said, we got here on Monday. My kids didn't know any. There's three. I have barely seen them all the time we've been here because they've been hanging out with kids at the pool. There you go. All right. So there's plenty of opportunities, but I think that it's important once they hit those teen years to get out there and make more opportunities for them to connect. Generally speaking, because not all kids want to be super social. So you also have to, I think, be okay with if your kids don't want to be social. Because we struggled with that a little bit early too, when our oldest one wasn't very social. He's like, no, I want to just kind of hang back. I don't want to, and my husband and I are pretty social. We're like, ooh, is that okay? You know, but, treat them as individuals. Let them get friendship. Listen to them. If they say, I'm not seeing enough people, find them more people. If they say, I'm seeing way too many people, I can't deal with it, back off. you know, keep that communication. I think the most important part of this whole thing is to develop a good relationship with your kids and listen to them. They're individuals.
I would also just say that I had a very big concern about my oldest son, who is very social, and he was in a school, a private school situation, and he started deciding not to go, and I took him out, and he has more socialization now that I am doing more with homeschoolers, because he knows how to deal with people that are 2 years older than him, and the boys who are 8, 9, 10, 12, 14, and his skill set is so much richer for that opportunity. And the other thing I will say is, if you have a highly social child, which my oldest was and I was concerned about that too, like, oh, the socialization. I was laughing because what does school teach him? He was getting in trouble every day. Every day I would pick him up from school and he was sitting by himself at a table eating lunch because he was talking during lunch. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's not telling your kid not to be social, well, here's all your friends and don't talk to them except for the 10 minutes you have at recess. If that's what you want your kid to learn, you know, to stay in those confines and then try and control themselves, you know, that's really, I mean, someone said that to me and I thought, oh, that's really true. That, like, 30 minutes of, you know, that hour play date, they're getting more socialization than they're getting that 8 hours in school.
It's cubicle training.
It's perfect cubicle training.
And one more thing on that, the phrase that I've used over and over again, is forced associations. And the consequence, like, the school is a forced association, public or private, is a forced association. Now, when associations are forced, the consequence, and I've seen this firsthand from being in and out of these schools and from working in the private schools, is that there's not going to be positive social interactions. So, like, there's plenty of training in these schools about, like, what to do if somebody cuts you off in traffic and, you know, like, how to be kind of what I saw and the connection that I made was is that there seemed to be three places where people, the interactions that peers were having were incredibly negative, even though that they were all in bad or undesirable or sometimes even dangerous situations together, right? Now, usually when that happens, like if a handful of us went out exploring and we found, even if we weren't friends, even if we were strangers, like here's five people, we're going for a hike. If we found ourselves in a common situation or a dangerous situation or a situation that we were not enjoying, our tendency would be to help each other, right? Because it was assembled voluntarily. When associations are forced, I think that the interactions that result are so negative, and where do we see them? This is where we see the greatest examples of people mistreating each other, which is, for kids, we call it bullying, right? Because you have to have a special name for when kids do it, because then if we said, you know, this kind of treatment of one human being to another is wrong, then the kids would be like, well, what the hell are you people all doing, you know? But school, associations are forced. Kids are contained with each other, you know, against their will. The military, associations are forced. Prison, associations are forced. And we see very similar behavior peer-to-peer in all three places. You know, prison, I know prison can be a little bit more extreme, okay? But school and prison, if you don't get yourself into a clique, you're screwed. In prison, it's worse. But, in both places, that's kind of the choice that you have.
Just real quickly on the same points that he was making. I mean, I didn't like high school. I kept waiting to get out of it because I thought, you know, I mean, in junior high, like, I was real afraid of letting people see my test scores, because if they saw I got a better score than them, you know, I was Bob the Brain. You know, that was my thing. So, I mean, when I think back, like, right now, the aspects of my personality that I wish I could alter, I'm like, yeah, I got screwed up in junior high. That's why I'm like that now. So, in terms of socialization, I think it would have been better for me had I, you know, skipped.
I want to say one last thing. That's why I advocate for unschooling. Hands down, is because of the voluntary associations and the forced associations. And I think that I see a lot of Liberty folks that have a very authoritarian family. And I'm not saying you can't do that, but I'm saying that maybe you don't have to. That's all.
A couple things. To the socialization issue, my daughter's 11, homeschooled since birth, and she's comfortable dealing with anyone from infant to geriatric. So socialization is not an issue. There's Girl Scouts, there's church, there's lots of other opportunities for that. One of the first things talked about is we have a right to educate our children. When you apply it to the state, you're now exercising a privilege, and you've converted your right to a privilege. So there's a major difference with that. Again, talking about going to college, the National Inflation Association just put out a one-hour documentary on how the whole institutional higher education system is a scam, and I'd recommend everybody watching that. And despite saying that, I'd like to find out if my daughter does want to go to college, which is a serious question. Is there something required, like passing a GED or something? Does the college require that if they've been homeschooled their whole life?
I can answer a little bit. Somebody else can probably answer a little better. But as far as for a while getting into colleges, speaking to other parents that are older, my son's 16, he's not interested. I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it. And for a good chunk of time, it's been pretty easy for homeschoolers because colleges were seeking them out. Now, what's happening, though, is at a federal level, they're putting in these little pieces of legislative wonder, you know, that are requiring things like in order to get financial aid, a school needs to be a certified type or certified school, and then authorized school or whatever kind of language they're using. So I think that if people aren't vigilant about this, that it's going to be more difficult. So it depends really on your child. She's 11. I don't know what it's going to look like in 8 years. I think in 2 years it's going to be more difficult for my kids. I mean, I think that these are things that are happening right now at mostly at a federal level, but I've seen it in other areas in other states, not so much New Hampshire. But if they have these federal ties to the monies and then you're going to have problems getting into admissions. Because they're going to be looking at schools. Well, let me look more at that homeschooling situation. It's not a huge issue right now, but in a few years, if you don't pay attention, it will be.
In a school that's tied to the federal government, we probably wouldn't want them there
little,
anyway.
And there are little bits everywhere. I've seen it so many, you know, like the HSLDA is pretty good about stuff like that, making notification, you know, alerting things. It's not I'm not a super fan of the organization, but they do have some good information. But there's other areas you can look out, you know, educational freedom websites and things like that. But just really pay attention because these are little pieces, you know, how they add little things in different bills for different things. And there's definitely a movement to squash homeschooling. I mean, no doubt about it. The NEA doesn't like it. I mean, it's on all kinds of different areas. So you got to pay attention because it might be a problem when your daughter gets to be college age.
So on the bureaucratic side, if your daughter ends up testing well, I would say anytime you can have something like an SAT score that's really high, then colleges don't care.
Okay.
I mean, honestly, and I know like there is a group that doesn't believe in any testing, and then there's a group, you know, if your daughter ends up being one that tests well, it's worth, you know, if you're saying how does she get in and what could help her, that's one thing that's, you know, has the test of time since I was in college to now. You know, they always look for that score, and she doesn't have a GPA necessarily, but obviously they look at that as, wow, well, obviously she's beating X amount of percentage of everybody else.
Okay.
So.
All right. Thanks.
Got a quick reminder for everybody. I'm sure everybody in this room knows this, but if you're talking to people that don't care at all about educational freedom, just remind them that New Hampshire spends about $15,500 per student. Most of the private schools in the state are $12,000 per year and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just say that to them, that starts the wheels turning in their mind, and it breaks up the constant barrage from the unions. Oh, we just need more money. No, they don't need more money. And my question was on the non-certified teacher thing. When we moved here 2 years ago, and I contacted several public and private schools. I used to be a research technologist at Mayo Clinic, and so I have great biology credentials. And you know, before that, I worked for Shea Wright Lab in Dallas, and you know, I have magna cum laude in biology from the university. So none of them were interested at all. They said, no, we only want certified teachers with experience, and we prefer no biology in real world. We just want a certified education degree, and that was public and private schools. So I guess I just didn't talk to the right people.
They...
Hampshire originally. I mean, like, I grew up
It was around Lebanon. I was like a couple public schools in Lebanon, a public school in Claremont, a private school in Canaan, another private school in Plainfield. And
Southern New Hampshire would have just moved.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I tried a few places in the South. I've forgotten the names because we didn't go that way. But, yeah, for whatever reason. So you said to get certified so you don't have to deal with this, then you get a letter of?
You get a letter of approval from the New Hampshire Department of Education. Right now, like, Southern New Hampshire is like the big cities. So where you're talking about Lebanon and the less populated, up here where it's less populated, it's possible that they want to only have accreditation, again, because they're following that bureaucratic line of getting money and making sure they qualify for certain things. That's true. And sometimes, again, for private schools, it comes down to, is a parent going to pick the private school and still pay tuition for a teacher who's not accredited? So that it comes down to the board's decision. But in Southern New Hampshire, you have so many opportunities because you have such a much more population in a condensed area. You find a lot of private schools that are going different routes because there's so much more opportunity, so much more clientele. If you look at the NHDOE department, you can, they have several paths that you can go through to get accredited. You know, one is the standard, you know, you have your master's of education and you do X amount of classes, and the other one is like a non-traditional, at least 4 years ago when I did it. I don't know how much it's changed since, but it is a non-traditional. It's still up there. It's a very straightforward way. And basically all they're saying is this person would qualify just the same as anyone else who's already accredited.
And then you, sir, are doing SAT prep, you said? So you're just purely private outside the system completely, right? You're just helping people prepare for the SATs as a private business.
Yes, yeah, it's outside. Well, I mean, I hate to say it, but we're obviously huge beneficiaries of the system because if they could teach these things, they wouldn't need me, right?
Well, if you don't know, though, it's pretty handy to have somebody teach you instead of just toss you in and have you flounder, which is what happens to most people, so.
Yeah. Sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, the short answer to your question is yes, that this is outside. You know, there was some debate with the company over the last couple of years about how to reach out to people in public schools. And I even tried this a little bit, like going to guidance departments and saying, you know, we've shown, or these are the results we've gotten back so far as like reading and math scores are concerned. And, you know, this is what we think we can do for you if you let us come in here and do it. That doesn't matter. That's like, you're not forming a business to business relationship with somebody. You're interrupting their minesweeper game. You know what I mean? So it was hard. Like, if
they
I could
care
go,
about their staff. You'd think but when I went to, it didn't involve them doing work.
Right, but well, and I don't want to say that either. But I mean, that's my experience, right? Mm-hmm. Where the you know the people would take the stuff and they'd be like, oh, there's a pile over there. You know, that doesn't mean the guidance people don't care about their students. And certainly, this is not a problem in public education with individuals, right? Like, I was talking with a couple yesterday who the wife was a teacher. And obviously has all the right intentions, but is working against the system within the schools. You know what I mean? So we're not talking like, you know, there's all these bad people and then they become teachers and public school bureaucrats. People get into this profession for the right reasons. You know, they want to help young people. They want to make a positive difference in the lives of others. And they wind up sucked into this system. And I think maybe sometimes people just let themselves go and they tell themselves a story about, you know, this is the good fight. This is a noble cause. When these people in Wisconsin with their union protests were met with any resistance, you saw how they just became like, what do piranhas travel in? Schools? Schools.
Yes.
School.
Coincidentally.
School of piranhas, pretty much.
Right.
To attack, and it wasn't about, oh, I see you've made some arguments here. Let's separate them and take them apart. It was like, there's the person who made them. Let's eat his flesh. You know? It was not about responding to, you know what? They weren't even arguments. They were questions I was asking. That I used Facebook as a forum to engage these people in what I thought could be a debate. It was a feeding frenzy on me as an individual, which included these union people taking screenshots of, you know, pictures of me on Facebook and making forum threads about them where they could comment about what an a-hole I was, you know, basically. And I only say that because we see what happens when people, want to believe that their cause is just and their intentions are good, and of course they're involved in something good as well. And when you do anything to disrupt that, I mean, this is the challenges that we have with the state.
Like, bring up any numbers.
But yeah, it's attack, right? It, you know, I mean, it's like, I call them, I mean, we probably can all sympathize a little bit with this because we're camping, but I call them fax swatters. You know, it's like, these things are everywhere when they start talking to us, and they get really frustrated by that because we're telling them, you know, how it is, and or we're putting forth authoritative sounding information that they can't argue against, and that makes people very uncomfortable. But back to the point, you know, people who work in these schools, I think they are good people. These guidance people are good people. Wow, this is a tangent. I'm so sorry. This is, you know, but the guidance people are, no, they just weren't very receptive generally from my experience, but that's not a knock against guidance people, and nothing that I do, I hope, is a knock against teachers across the board or, you know, public school personnel generally. However, when I did go to private school, the guy sat me down and talked to me for like 45 minutes because they can use their SAT scores as a recruitment
tool. They care more about the results from the school. Well, you'd expect that.
There was a quicker way to the end of that story, but...
Thanks.
I'm sorry, anything else?
No, I think that covers it. Thanks very much.
And I just think it's important, too, that we point out the gun in all of this, that when you kind of started the statement by saying public school costs $15,000, most private school costs, you know, $12,500, whatever.
Yeah.
It's very important that we don't make it sound like that's a choice, right? The people who pay the $12,500 for private school, they're also paying the $15,000 in property tax. Yeah. So they pay twice.
Sure.
That's all I wanted to add. But
it's just most people are in a situation where their kid is going to a not so great school, and they're spending, you know, all this money is going to support that. And you point out, well, you know, that same money could go to a different school, and the light goes on in their mind, and maybe it'll stay on for 10 minutes. Who knows?
Okay, I think after my next question, I think we have time for about one more question. But Bob, I wanted to ask you specifically about online education. Just the benefits and the structure, just in general, and then specifically about the Mises courses and what they're like and who they are marketed to and all of that.
Okay, sure. So this is be more relevant, I think, for people. We're gearing it towards junior high and up is the age where it's what we've been doing at the Mises Institute. And it's this wouldn't have been possible even 5 years ago, I think, but now the technology, you know, we were skeptical at first, but we looked into it, and it's actually pretty smooth. So the way a typical one of my courses works is like once a week it'll be a live video feed, and so people, you know, will log in and have it, and they don't even have to download special software. It's just, you know, they have a web browser and get it connected. And the system we have right now, I mean, there's no interruptions or anything. Like we tried a different one that didn't work last year that would it freeze up a lot. But the one we're using now, it's completely smooth. Because we use the same software that like businesses use to have teleconferences with each other, so it's, you know, it's commercial and it's very smooth. And I, you know, we'll have like a PowerPoint slide and go through. And if I want to, like, you know, I do economics, so if I have to do a supply and demand thing, I can do a dry erase board and they can see it in real time as I'm walking it through. So we do that. I mean, I've been getting 200 plus students in my classes, which, you know, that makes it certainly profitable. I mean, I could literally quit everything else and just do that full time. And so for us being into Austrian economics, that's exciting from that angle because now I can tell people with a good conscience, if you like Austrian economics, go ahead and major in it and go get your PhD and write a dissertation if you want to, because if nothing else, you can teach online classes and that's how you can, you know, support yourself. Whereas before, that would like literally be career suicide. Now I say, now you're just basically cutting off your left arm. You're not killing yourself if you, you know, specialize in Austrian economics. So, I mean, I'm more explaining why it's good from people who are interested in this stuff that this, just teaching online, because if you think about it, I mean, the economies of scale, I have kids that are, or adults even, that are in, you know, Singapore and China and elsewhere that are in my classes, whereas if you were teaching in a building, obviously that wouldn't work. So if you're in a little obscure thing where, you know, I'm going to go through Man Economy and State Murray Rothbard's book, who wants to do that? Well, there's 230 people on earth that wanted to do it the last 8 weeks. And so, you know what I mean? And I made, that was well worth my hourly rate doing that. You know, whereas if I had to do it in a classroom, then obviously I'd rather go flip burgers and be more efficient. So so that's what we're doing there. And like I say, it keeps expanding. I think as more and more of the like actual college professors, when I tell them, you know, you'll make more per hour doing this than what you're making, it's your thing. You know, so they're not going to quit, but they're going to start doing it on the side and see how it works. So that's what we're doing. And I know like there's is it Khan? Am I saying that right? I personally don't know much about that, but that's what a lot of people are saying is good. So anyway, I think this is a wave of the future, and people who are taking our classes, it's cheap enough so that they're okay with the fact that we can't give them a state, you know, seal of approval. We're not accredited, but people don't mind that. They realize that it's, you know, they're doing it because they want to learn that stuff. And then we even have a lot of employers, like guys who run hedge funds who care about Austrian economics, and they might, if somebody comes through and says, oh, yeah, I got an A in Bob Murphy's class on the Austrian business cycle theory, you know, that might make them more likely to hire that person. Or we have people, Austrian economists at undergrads, who will, like, let a kid test out of a certain requirement if he's done the online thing. So we can, even though technically we can't, the state's not giving us credit, there's ways that it benefits you beyond just, you know, the fact that you're walking around in no man economy and state, because don't we all want to do that?
I just started homeschooling my kindergartner, and I'm getting ready to start for fourth grade. But I am using an out-of-the-box curriculum to get me started, to give me that little extra comfort and security that I need, because I feel I need that structure just to help me move along and get a broad-based subject matter covered. But I'm not setting a schedule, just doing it when it seems like the right time to do it, when the kids are responsive to it. So I just wanted to share that, and I'm pretty excited about it. I'm in PA. I'm not in New Hampshire yet. But my one daughter's had excellent success in private school. None of my kids have ever been in public school. Yay. And they won't be. So what I wanted to share was that I've had excellent experience with the Quaker school. They use shared age groupings. It's a small community, and that doesn't seem to exist to my knowledge. I've talked to just a couple of people who said, no, they don't have the Quaker schools up here, and it's not that I'm a Quaker. It's the structure of it. So what I'm interested to find out is there any private, small community private schools, or you mentioned co-op schools, which would be very interesting to me, because I felt that she got kind of the best of both worlds. It was structured, but very much individualized. They did a lot of, nothing is really forced. It's a gentle way. And they also, because of the small community, the whole school, pre-K through six, there's only 300 kids. But anyway, the benefit there was that people, you know, you knew each other, and it's a real sense of community, and that's something that I would want to find in New Hampshire, whether that came from homeschooling, the other families that I could associate with, or if that came in the form of the co-op school, or if it came in the form of another small private school. So, all of that said, does anybody have a way of sharing resources about these small community schools that I could use? And also with that, is there something else that would be beneficial to know, to hook into? Like, I know you have the nhomeschooling.org? Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, there is.
Is there more that I could find out?
There are several homeschooling websites, and almost every community based around a region has a homeschooling. And then there's things like New Hampshire Relaxed Homeschooling Network is like 500 families across the state.
Oh, okay.
540 is what we're up to. It started with two. It's up to 540.
Oh, that's terrific.
There are tons of private schools that you're talking about. So, I know that there are ones like in Canterbury that is a K through three, small, one room. Mm-hmm. It's an individualized curriculum kind of thing, but they also pride themselves in doing a lot of outdoor things. So they have goats and they have nature trails. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of those types of private schools.
Right.
So I don't think it's necessarily Quaker because of region. But there are a lot of, there's nature schools. And there's a lot of different Montessori schools. Be careful, because Montessori can vary widely,
yes,
depending.
I'm
but there are those. There's Waldorf schools in southern New Hampshire. So there are those communities outside of just homeschooling.
Right.
There are those private opportunities. You mentioned that website, if you know them offhand.
Oh, yes. That's the New Hampshire Homeschooling Coalition website, I think.
Is that what it's called?
Okay. Yeah, and they have a lot of – they have links on their page that has a listing of all kinds of different groups. But like Jen said, they're in any area of New Hampshire, there's tons of groups in Seacoast. There's Seacoast, New Hampshire. There's the
Ware.
we are homeschoolers.
So if I did a search based on the geography, I might be able to find some things online.
Do that, or you could even join one of the groups, like New Hampshire Relaxive. That would be a good one to join if you go onto that website, and then they can. People there can hook you up with other people that are even smaller groups of people.
Sure.
And more often in many different
groups. And on Facebook, too. There's tons on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Tons of Facebook groups.
Okay, that's terrific. I just wanted to kind of get the nuts more practical information, because I'm on board with the philosophical end of things and the practical end of things and the benefits and unplugging from anything federal and state. I'm totally into that. But it's just a matter of once we do make the move, just having the comfort level of it's there, I can find it, and where to look.
Well, also I wanted to add the private schools. Mm-hmm. One thing is if there are a couple, like if you're looking like for a free school type environment where it's all ages, they're not in New Hampshire, but they're right on the borders. There's one in Kittery, and then which is in Maine. So depending on where you lived in New Hampshire, it's completely commutable. Okay. And then there's the Sudbury Valley School. So if you're living in southern New Hampshire, that would be an option. It's if you live in southern New Hampshire, it's in Massachusetts. Yeah. But it would be commutable completely.
Right. Okay, sweet.
And those are non-public, obviously.
Right. Okay, great. Thank you.
One thing to talk about. When you're talking about commutable, my son went to a private school that was 20 miles from the home.
Mm-hmm.
And there were enough families around where we created carpools. So instead of 10 jobs a week, I only did 4.
Right.
So you'll find people in the area who you can make that
hook
work
up.
With.
Right.
Yeah. So don't think of that as being a hindrance, because that was one of the biggest things that I had looked at as a giant obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, I said, but there's 8 other families. I just fill up a van with 7 boys in the back.
Sweet.
Throw a book on tape in it.
There you go.
So it's totally doable.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.